bring them back up to date, and so I, but I don't know that for sure and how it works on all their permits.
And I guess about the only thing, the salmon gantry and all that stuff that's on there is, or something, the poles. There's a few things on there, not a lot.
The gurney's about the biggest divide you got on a boat.
The what?
The gurney's?
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
No, I want work on it first.
That's good.
You're also the presenter, so I wasn't meant to worry.
Holy shit.
Or no.
I've been a couple of people.
All right, Richard, you can start whenever you're ready.
Okay, we'll call the meeting to order. This is the regular commission meeting for Port of Victor's Heart on Commissions. Wednesday, November 15th, 2023. Join me in the pledge of allegiance.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, Danielle, roll call, please.
Larry?
Here.
Dan?
Here.
Sharon?
Here.
Richard?
Here.
Joel is absent.
Are there any modifications, additions, or changes to the agenda?
No.
No.
Anybody need to declare potential conflict of interest?
No.
Okay, I take motion to approve the agenda.
Motion to approve the agenda?
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Take this to the approval of meeting minutes for the regular commission meeting Wednesday, October 18th, and the special commissioner meeting Thursday, October 25th. Any comments? Anybody have any changes, corrections, additions? Okay.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes of regular commissioner meeting Wednesday, October 18th, 2023, and the minutes of special commissioner meeting on Thursday, October
26th, 2023. Second. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Bring this to public comments. I have none in front of me. Are you aware of any?
I did not receive any public comments.
Okay. Then we move to management and financial reports.
Okay. So in the RV park, port staff completed concrete blocks around the dumpsters. That was kind of to finish it up and a requirement from the fire marshal. One of our traffic rated box, new traffic rated McClendon did come out and replace it. One pedestal was hit by an RV and broke the water line. The water line was fixed and no other damage was done to the pedestal. And three fences were repaired. Beachfront RV park. When you look at the graph, it is still staying down at not as good of a year as we've had before. The occupancy is down more than it's been the last couple of years. Dock walks are ongoing to check for loose connections on docks or cleats. Staff are also looking for any dock violations, ropes that may need to be replaced, and vessels that need to be pumped out. Curry County was out to clean their sediment catch basin near the hotel parking lot. Port staff assisted with the cleaning by placing our turbidity curtain at the outfall of the pipe. The annual inspection for our standard cellars were completed by OSMB. We are currently still working with Berinsing to correct the monitoring process. OSMB and Harbor Sanitary are aware of the problem and we continue to keep them updated. Boat launches were up, a lot of boats in the river fishing. Telehandler work performed by, that was one travel lift haul out, four. Commercial receiving docks, the public hoist is operational and ready. Hallmark, Bornstein, and Pacific Seafood, all their docks are operational. And we have received the signed lease amendments for the landing fees from all three of them. So we are set in a pretty good spot for moving forward now. It's all kind of, It's in the leases. Commercial retail building, staff completed all fire marshal corrections throughout the port. Staff has begun looking into options for a new warehouse building in the boatyard. Maintenance crew, staff completed 84 work orders for the month of October. Staff has started assigning new gear storage areas for the existing customers and using delineators to define the spot, and that's up there by the green building area. We pretty much got that all the way filled up, so should be able to move all those crab pots, you know, once they go in, when they come back in, they'll all get moved up, and we'll be able to start working on keeping that bottom area clean. Staff continue to keep up on routine maintenance while working on FEMA. Staff has nearly finished the sediment discharge area. Staff completed training on HDPE welding. Setting pipe and welding should be completed by the first week of November, and all the welding is done on the pipe and set in place for our first bit that we're going to weld down by the boatyard, or dredge in the boatyard. Office staff, 23 mortgage renewals, invoicing for gear and leased area, and their daily and significant tasks completed are attached. FEMA sediment basin construction is nearly complete. We are waiting on more concrete blocks so we can separate the pond from the dry stockpile. Billiter Marine was expected to start work October 16th and have rescheduled us for the 1st of December. After clamshell work is completed, some of the material will be moved to the sediment area and to build up material against the concrete blocks. Wastewater treatment plant update. Jack has completed the final steps of phase two funding. Port staff reviewed and submitted to EPA. After EPA reviews and is satisfied with phase two package, we will discuss and approve in a public meeting. We are also reviewing plant design and cost estimates with Pacific Seafood. The current phase two estimate for matching is $772,300. And that's what I have for you guys. Questions?
What kind of a lid was a traffic lid? Was this on like an irrigation box?
The box where our one of the only box from the new, with our new configuration that we did, the box landed like right in a drive aisle of a spot, and a motorhome ran over it and broke it. It was a box that housed the old cable TV before we decided to get rid of it. So it's still there, it's just it got fixed and replaced. So.
Fire marshal has been through every building the port owns.
Yep.
And it's up to
all of them.
It's up to, they've all been accepted by her, signed off on that they're okay.
She's come, well, she's, we did her punch list of everything that needed to be corrected, and she's coming back to do another walkthrough just to confirm and take pictures that it's all done to what needs to be done.
So she's been in the blue building with all the supports and da 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 da.
She's been at Joe's. She went in the boat building, the boat shop.
She's okay with what we've done and what's going on over there.
For what's going on, but I, at the same time, I have told her that we are looking at replacing this building. We know there is major things to do with that building. So I, way I can kind of interpret it, she's being pretty lenient with us, given I would imagine if we get a couple years down the road and we haven't done anything, the fix it list is going to get longer. But she's here to work with us. She's been very cooperative with us, you know, understanding. Both these businesses have never had a fire marshal inspection. So if everything that she ran into here, she said was all very common throughout the entire Curry and Coos County. She does both. And she just said we're working through the things, and the things that have to be fixed, you know, obviously have to be, and the things that we can work on, she wants to work with us.
And Billet Marine moved us to December. What will they be doing in December?
Clamshelling, the boatyard area.
Is there any comment about the one?
Oh, go ahead.
About the 100 clamp from the fire marshal? As far as, because that, I mean, that was never really designed to be a restaurant. That was believed. It's kind of an add-on back there.
The outside thing, it was built as
She was pretty happy that she had some things.
Inside,
about
there is some daisy chain things. She did look at the hood that was in there. She did tell them they needed to have it cleaned again. Those by restaurants, and if you own a restaurant, they're supposed to be done annually. So they couldn't provide her with the documentation, I don't think, that it was in the last year. I know they were really good about it. And when 6 years ago or so, it was really bad. We replaced the hood vent. It was in really bad shape. And I know they were on with Umpqua Fire for quite a few years, but not exactly sure. But they didn't have the documentation, so they were recommending to do that.
Question in regards to the pipe that has been placed for the dredging. Do we have a booster pump that's going to be in place between, so you figure that the dredge will be able to push and clean those sag areas, for lack of a better way of putting it, such as underneath the travel lift and hallmarks, with no problem? It won't clog up.
Okay. I have to say I was fortunate enough to be down there when you were welding pipes. That is impressive. I'm always amazed at the ingenuity of somebody that figured all that out and how slick that worked. I mean, that's cool.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, the dredge is designed to pump by itself for 3,000 feet. And the head is figured, I think, at about 40 feet. So we don't plan on trying to maximize all of it. We're starting a lot closer. We're starting at about 2,000 feet, maybe. So we'll be able to also track how well it's pumping through a flow meter at the end. It should be pumping 9 to 11 feet per second. So we will be able to monitor that. And if we find that there's a significant drop for some reason, you know, obviously we'll look at it. But pump curves, design and engineering says it'll pump 3,000 feet.
Well, I'm just concerned about the sag sediment sitting in there at the end of the day or in that.
There won't be any sediment that sits in there at any time. As you start and stop the pump, you start the pump with running seawater through it. When you stop pumping the sand, you lift it up and you let it pump until it completely clears that line, until you see clean water coming out the other end of the pipe, and then that's when you shut it down.
Just thinking the thin sag, I just think it'd be better if it was tied up against the bottom of the dock so that it wouldn't have that. It would reduce pressure on the back pressure on the pump.
We'll see what we have to do. I am definitely not saying that every single part of this is figured out and there won't have to be changes made. The reason we can't attach it to the bottom of the dock is because it's extremely heavy. Once you fill it up with material and seawater, it's extremely heavy. All those sags, like where you see there, it's going to pull them all out, you know, flatten everything straight down. If it's floating in the water and you fill it, it sinks straight to the bottom. Mm-hmm. So it's, we're confident in what we're doing so far, but there could be adjustments that have to be made.
Okay.
One question. Richard, you mentioned last month about salmon season, the lack of salmon season out in the ocean, and the net loss that the port took from that, both slips, both launches. And so is this something the port commissioners can do, is to keep track of that, use it for muscle in order to create have them think twice about eliminating another ocean salmon season?
Yeah, we could track it. I mean, just compare it from year to year. But the issue is we don't have any muscle in this pipe. The Pacific Fisheries Marine Council, when they are doing their season, they have an economist who works for them, who looks at the economic return for every point. So they look at that, and they're aware that there's losses. But unfortunately, that doesn't supersede all the other stuff we got to do. And the other stuff we got to do in this case is the clouds. And that's a listed run. It's a surrogate for a listed group of fish. So my point is, yeah, we can do that and we can bring that up.
Is there any compensation for from the state?
Not for ports, not for recreational fishermen. Commercial fishermen can apply for disaster relief.
Okay.
And they can get that. But, and I don't know, ports may be, I'm not positive of that. I know the fishermen can. I'm not sure about fish-related businesses, but.
I've never heard that.
I don't think we've ever applied for it, so.
Okay.
But, yeah, I'd like to take all that in the big wastebasket and go, hey, look, but.
Yeah.
Mostly when you tell them that, they go, yep, got it. Okay, anything else on that report?
This, will it include the office staff report and his manager's report? Because one, and reading through the tasks that the office completed on Gary's, you said that you guys met with finance, with PAC Choice to discuss the financial needs. Just curious if you could give us an update on that, what that amounts to.
Yes, so Pacific Seafood, as we've been going through, obviously has expressed interest, and we have turned in our phase two funding to EPA for them to start reviewing it. I wanted to make sure I didn't get it approved by you guys to take it to them, and then they change a bunch of stuff. So it's not signed, but it is being reviewed. Once they say it's okay, which is in this meeting, they will approve it, and then we can sign it and actually do the funding. I feel like I'm getting off track. So the meeting that we had with them was to show them what our engineered estimate was, what the budget was looking at for the phase two construction, and the estimated number we'll be looking for there, because they need to budget it. They needed to talk about it on their end, so I gave them a estimated number and to let them start deciding on their end, because they said it could take through their budgeting season another month or two for them to talk about it, and I didn't want that to be a factor of holding this up.
In the past, they've been very receptive. Do you still get that feeling from them that they're going to pay a
that conversation, and they absolutely need the wastewater treatment plant. That need is not going away,
right.
And they're very aware of what we're asking. So it's just, they've been very reluctant to give us an exact answer,
right.
But the number I gave them was for budgeting purposes for them.
What was that number?
$772,300.
Well, unfortunately, in that, one of the two main products they received, that fishery appears to be pretty sound. The pink shrimp fishery, crab, I don't know, but I'm sure that factors into their decision as well as to, you know, how feasible that is. But at least they're not dealing with animals. Okay, any other questions on that report? Okay, that brings us to the safety, security, and environmental report.
Court staff discussed situational awareness. We only had two incidences for the month of October. An RV guest backed into an RV fence. The maintenance was able to fix that. And port staff found a needle on the ground. Four aces in the port came across 43 security issues for the month of October. And we did our monthly inspections for our stormwater pollution control plan. It's pretty slow this month.
Would you be willing to do situational awareness at Fred Meyer?
Yeah.
Any questions on that? Okay, that brings us to the financial side.
Okay, so for the month of October 2023, our unrestricted cash and equivalents totaled $259,419. Our restricted cash and equivalents totaled $384,560, with our total checking and savings at $643,979. Our profit and loss total revenue for all funds was $329,680, with our total expenses at $354,212, bringing our net income for October at a negative $24,532. Overall, our program revenues netted a positive $101,000 $1,431. So far, our total income for all funds for this budget year is 12.8%, with general fund revenues at 33.2%. Our total expenditures for all funds is at 14.6%, with general fund expenditures at 29.4%. We did make our final loan payment on our travel list in October. We paid some lodging taxes and property taxes, and then I've put in the most recent expenditures and outstanding reimbursements for FEMA and EPA at the bottom. So we are still waiting on quite a few reimbursements.
Good thing is I did get an email, and they have processed at least two of our previous submissions, and they should be going through FEMA financials so we can access those funds hopefully this week.
I want to tell them to print the check before Friday, although it sounds like that's going to happen.
Yeah, they're maximizing their 90 days.
So it occurs to me that we're coming up close to a year since you guys took over.
Yes. I was looking at that today. I have a call into our attorney, or an email into our attorney to review and start on a new port manager contract. I kind of forgot. My effective date on it was the 21st, and I kept thinking December 21st, but when we signed it on the 21st, it was backdated to December 1st. So we might have to have a special meeting to do that.
Well, the point I wanted to make is I think that in that year, it seems to me like this has been kind of seamless. I don't think it, from your perspective, it feels that way, at least not the first 2 or 3 months, but I can't say enough about what a good job that you guys have done in picking it up and just keeping going.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, any other comments on the financial statement?
No.
Okay, that brings us to action item A.
We're going to do the presentation.
We're doing a presentation.
I'm sorry.
Actually, can I make a motion to accept the financial and...
Yes, you can. Thank you very much.
The financial and what was it, management reports?
Second.
We have a motion and second, Danielle.
Larry.
Yes.
Dan.
Yes.
Sharon.
Yes.
Richard.
Yes.
Thank you, Dan.
Right now. Do not know. I cannot remember the reason. Okay, that brings us down. I'm sorry, I read this down. Presentation by Curry County Aquatic Safety, Luke Parsons.
He will be doing a PowerPoint presentation, so the lineup will be right there if you would like to move.
Can I do it here?
You're fine right there. I'm letting the audience know that they're going to be blinded here soon.
All right. I'll make this quick. You guys have a lot of business. Thank you for letting me come present. I'm impressed by your guys' report. I've been to all the other port meetings, and I haven't seen this yet. So it's pretty cool. The data that we're getting back, especially with some of the user data, it's pretty cool. So thanks. Good job. Thank you so much. So thanks for your time. Thanks for your service. Bit of duty. Thanks for my name is Luke Martinez. My official title is I'm an aquatic safety officer for Curry County. I'm not law enforcement, but we cover outreach, education, and response when needed to our waterways and shorelines here in the county. This is a pilot program started about 4 years ago. The program has been all grant funded. Up to this point. And as you can see, that kind of... I think it's getting brighter. Currently, the program is just staffed by myself. So the mission statement is we provide public safety, resource protection, and visitor services to the south coast of Oregon. Should I go right click?
Right click or roll.
Okay. Let's do this. You right clicked on this.
Oh,
I got you. Oh, I see it. If I keep it right there. So... see if that works.
Okay, okay.
So, just to start with some fun facts. Curry County has over 100 miles of coastline. You didn't know that?
Yeah.
This is the most, longest stretch of coastline in the county, entire state of Oregon. Didn't know that. Anybody know where that's at? Yeah, you got it. Seeker Beach, yeah. Good aerial photo of Seeker Beach. The other cool fun fact about Curry County is that we have over 362 square miles of rivers, lakes, and streams within the county, which is also the most water within the county in the state of Oregon. So we're pretty much surrounded by water all around us. So the program kind of stemmed off of that fact that we're surrounded by water. In the last decade or so, it was a perception of mine that we just keep seeing an increase in traffic, an increase in tourism, an increase in aquatic recreation. We're kind of in a hub down here in the Port of Brookings. It's always had a lot of aquatic recreation, boating, surfing, fishing, right? It's always been happening down here. So we spend a lot of time doing our outreach, where we're just educating users in the shoreline area. Harris Beach on a common summer day. Harris Beach State Park, and it was interesting looking at year numbers. In 22, Harris Beach recorded 5 million day-use visitors that came through Harris Beach. It was tied for the most with Yaquina Head up in Newport, the most at a state park in the state of Oregon. Both sides of Harris Beach on a busy summer day. Sport Haven, spent quite a bit of time at Sport Haven just talking to folks. I forgot what day this was. It was one of these busy summer days with a lot of people with pot, obviously, which it usually is down here. 10 degrees warmer than anywhere else in the county. So we're out here just talking to people. Main priority of the program is that the people that are visiting, the people that are recreating in our area are educated about the environment because, as you all know, our coastline can be extremely dangerous and rugged. Immediate contacts for us are people with kids. So if we see any children near around the water, then we'll make contact with parents to talk to them, see what's going on. There you go. Another super popular spot in the south coast of the county is Natural Bridges. Natural Bridges, they just put state parks put a counter there this summer. They started in February. They put a ticker so on to go out to the viewpoint. They put a ticker out there. If somebody walks by the ticker, it ticks for a second and a half, and then it goes off. So it could be a group of 5, 10, whatever's in that second and a half. It started off around 6,000 ticks in April, I think. July saw 36,000 ticks. October, which was interesting on your numbers, you had a lot of boat launches this October, maybe because the fishing's good. It seems like our transition, our fall, spring period continues to be busy and kind of building, right? So we're seeing that on our end in terms of our numbers as well. Just north of Natural Bridges, super popular area, Seeker Beach. You all been there. It's not so secret. I hope I'm not giving away secrets right now. This is common seeing on a summer day down there nowadays. It got popular on Google or somewhere, social media. A lot of times down there talking to people, we've got some people up on the cliff edge there, not such a great spot. Again, we're making outreach education to these people during these days. Natural Bridges parking lot, this is a pretty common scene. It's a really dangerous spot pulling out of there. Are these people all coming from Texas? No. But I do see, in this past year, I've seen a lot of people from Texas, Michigan, Florida, New York. Those are some popular areas from out the country. Also seeing an uptick in international tourists post-COVID, seeing more Germans, actually Eastern Europeans, Germans, actually seeing a lot of Germans. Don't know if you've seen that down the port, but you guys seem to also are a crux within the county in terms of tourism, people coming through the region. Spent a lot of time out on the water. Anybody know this guy?
Yeah.
He's pretty cool. I met him out in the water. He built that stand-up paddleboard. Anyway, so we're out there educating our boaters, making sure that they have proper life jacket, safety gear on them, making contacts. If I didn't mention at the beginning of the program currently we are funded through Travel Curry Coast, which is the destination management organization through the county. So the TLP goes into the DMO. We're also funded through Travel Southern Oregon Coast, which is more of a regional DMO. They're based out of Coos Bay, actually out of Bandon Dunes. And then we're also in a contract with the Oregon State Marine Board, and we're in a 5-year contract with them for boating safety. So those are our primary funders. We're also funded through the City of Gold Beach, kicked in this year just because of the amount of outreach we have in that region. And then also our equipment comes from the Oregon State Marine Board and the Curry Health Foundation grant. Yes, sir.
I know you said you wasn't in law enforcement, but real quick, when it comes to voter education, are you informing voters that they need to make sure that the navigable waterways are clear for ingress and egressing boats in the towns?
Yeah. I spent a lot of time in the Rogue Bay just because it's been a pretty hot spot. Super dangerous bar, right? So I spent a lot of time out there, and we have issues with that as well. But yeah, any education that needs to be done out there, our primary goal is that everybody's having a great time, but at the same time being safe. So if people are unaware of boat traffic, then that's something that we'll contact them with and make sure they're aware. Especially non-motorized boaters with motorized boaters, vice versa, right? A bunch of different user groups. I think this was taken maybe a month ago or something. Was pretty busy out there. And I'll keep going on this. Good question. Spent a lot of time on our coastal waterways with... I'll come back. So we spent a lot of time on the Checo River, especially now, the fall Chinook fishery into the winter steelhead fishery. In this photo, you'll see we've been really working on fishermen. The wear rate for life jackets with fishermen is pretty bad. Fishermen don't like wearing life jackets. I get it. But what has become popular are these inflatable life jackets, which are great. However, this year the state has accounted for 14 boating-related drownings. Two of those have been because those things don't go off. So they're ignited by a CO2 cartridge in there. So those cartridges will go bad, they'll fail, and so that they are. There's some problems with them. We're also having some problems. There's some coming out of China that are not U.S. Coast Guard approved, and they actually are saying, oh, these are for kids. Coast Guard recommends that those inflatables aren't given to anybody, or anybody under 16 should be not wearing inflatables. Thanks for fixing that. Anybody know where that's at? Nook Bar, yeah. That's my favorite spot. That's everybody else's favorite spot, too, but yeah. That's the only place I've seen an inflatable of unicorns with a trampoline on it. I don't know when that was, but it was pretty cool. Anyways, during the summertime, we're talking to a lot of waterway users, especially on our coastal streams, everybody's having a good time swimming. So that's our outreach education component. What we calculate, I gather, so when we make contacts, I put that in a data collection form. Right now, in the last 3 years, I've been averaging 7,500 contacts a year with boaters to shoreline users. So we're talking to a lot of people. It's not the 5 million that are coming through Harris Beach, but it's a lot of people. What we really focus on is a collaboration with the National Weather Service. They started putting these out about 4 years ago. You started seeing sneaker wave warnings, right, high surf advisory. National Weather Service started doing this about 4 years ago because from basically from 2000 to 2016, there was a string of a bunch of beach-related deaths, right? High surf events, people getting caught in rip currents, stuff like that. So they were trying to figure out, well, how can we better educate the public? So they put these out now. Our part of this process is that we are the boots on the ground. So when these go out, we're on call. Patrol the coastline when we have a high surf warning, sneaker wave warning, tsunami warning, which we had whenever that volcano blew up a couple years ago, right? So we're boots on the ground, out making sure that our shoreline users and recreationists are educated what's going on. Because most of the time, people just aren't aware, right? They came from Colorado, they've never seen the ocean before, they don't know what 20 foot is opposed to 2 foot. It's not their fault, they just don't know. So this is up in North County. This is Searden. I don't know how many of you have been up there, Paradise Point area. That's, to me, one of the most dangerous beaches in our county. It's a pretty incredible spot, but incredibly dangerous shorebound. So out on days like today, that day with a sneak away warning, I was talking to these users, making sure that they're aware that there's a warning going on, back to the ocean, picking up nagget. Harris Beach, I think this day we had it was going from pretty small, so there's a high surf advisor going to be issued that day, all the logs, people with their kids down in the logs, tides coming in, not a good spot. I think this day at Harris Beach, we had a, believe it or not, a sneaker wave warning, making sure people are educated that there was incoming swell that's happening. This day, this kind of captures my, what we call preventative action, first preventative action when I started this position. Driving by Humbug, and as I drove by, I looked down the trail and I saw two ladies with a couple kids, had life jackets on, and it looked like this that day. So it was a big, huge surf, 20, 25 feet. So I turned around, went back, came back down to the beach park and started running out there. I thought it was kind of a weird scene. Got out there, and there was two kids that were about to enter the water line, right? So, and they had their life jackets on, so I made a big fuss and started yelling and scared them and got back to their mom. Well, they were from Colorado. They had never seen the ocean before. They didn't know that it was extremely dangerous and that there was a rip current going a mile and a half out to sea. So I educated them on that and said, hey, you know, you're not sending your kids out there today. So had I not said something, what would have happened to the kids? Would they have been sucked out in the rip current a mile and a half and lost? We don't know. Would they have just gotten out there and got pushed back to end? We don't know. But what we call those are preventative actions. It's basically giving verbal or physical alarm to somebody to get them out of a situation that could cause injury or death. We've been averaging over 200 of those a year. So we really focus on those. The program also in our responses for rescues, we've got over a couple dozen rescues, but most of these are happening in front of us. We also assist agencies in aquatic-related rescues as well. Natural bridges, common scene these days. We've been spending a lot of time there because most of you know this is a pretty popular spot to take your selfie, take photos. Unfortunately, in the last 3 years, we've had 3 fatalities in that region. But we're really focusing on preventing those fatalities, focusing on preventing those things happening before they do happen. That's a huge tax on not only our responding agencies, but just the public as well. Nobody wants to see this, right? It's pretty heartbreaking situations that happen in areas where people just have trying to have a good time. So here's a look at the data we're collecting. You can kind of see the basis of the stuff on the left. Put all that in depending on what it is, and it turns out something like this. What I am working on right now is creating a program that is so I can share with the port. Like, look, you guys can log in and see real time, like where the program's making contacts, what's happening. It may give you some insight that user data, or it may help you out in your operations in some sense. But it's good data. We've been collecting that for the last 3.5 years. Our collaborative partners are a huge deal for us. We've collaborated pretty closely with both port districts. I think Brookings is probably the least I haven't had a lot of interaction. It's not your fault, it's my fault, just for getting in and discussing. So that's why I'm here today, is just to talk to you, tell you what we're doing, and have a better relationship there. We also partner really closely with California State Parks, their lifeguard division. They have a division out of Trinidad, just in Humboldt County, and they come all the way up to the state line, up to Crescent City. They are currently working on getting a full-time guard based out of Crescent City. So I work really closely with them, train with them. They're a great model for our program. We're achieving to be with them. We also work really closely with the Coast Guard, your Checker River sector here in the North Bend sector as well. Fire, local fire agencies, really good guys, I should say. We try to hook them up with life jackets, things that will help them out in their day-to-day, their contacts with people as well. The other thing we do is we go into all the school districts within the county. We also stretched out into Coos County as well this year. This last year, we served over 2,500 students through the county office doing water safety education. We usually do this in the spring. We have fun time for kids. The other thing we've been working on is our infrastructure, life jacket loaner stations. Here's one at Lowe State Park. You guys have a good one. I think Bob Zillery put back in, right, at the boat ramp. So, again, if you run out of life jackets, talk to me. You know, we have a great relationship with the state. If there's a new, or if you need new signage, you can reach out. This is a fancy new sign. It's a bilingual, great sign on the Lowe. Work with the state parks, National Weather Service, help them get some new signage up for some of the beach access signs. I walk right by these signs. I know a lot of people do, but that's why they're boots on the ground presence. I don't know. I get blurry, start reading too much stuff, but it is really good information. The other thing we worked on is we helped with this kayak launch, non-motorized kayak launch at the Portable Beach. You guys have one? No, you don't have yet. That's it. Just FYI, I know that there are a lot of the tourism entities like TSOC, Travel Southern Oregon Coast, Aqua, they're really into some of the non-motorized boating ramps, so it's a good conduit if you're looking for, you know, that type of infrastructure. It's pretty good. Become more popular, right, with the amount of non-motorized paddlers we have. You've got South Coast Sewers down here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot of trips out of there, right? See, the other thing, this was yesterday, I was trying to get some people, they had 8 people signed up, but only a few showed up. But we work a lot on education for not just visitors, but our community. This was, we teamed up with Sea Grant. They held this yesterday at the Coast Guard Station. They're going to come back next year, supposedly. And so, yeah, there's fleets. They're just trying to get commercial fishing. It's free. They have free breakfast, but anyways, that was a good one. Our workforce development is, we've been doing it for the last 2 years. That's our junior lifeguard program. She's not a junior lifeguard, that's just my niece, but I couldn't help it because I love this program. So our junior lifeguard program covers kids from 9 to 17. This last 2 years ago we started in Port Orford, we had 23 kids. This year we had a session not only in Port Orford, but in Harris Beach as well. We had 43 at Port Orford this year and 23 at Harris Beach. They're learning first aid, CPR, water safety techniques, water rescue techniques. It's pretty much building these kids. So because they're surrounded by a water environment, we're building their confidence, their skills, so they can interact, recreate in their environment, and feel safe doing so. It's a pretty rigorous week we put them through. It's a 5-day course, 10 to 2:30. They have a lot of fun. The most fun time for them is free time when they just get to do whatever they want in the water. Then at the end of it, they do an iron challenge where they do a run, swim, paddle. It's basically their big test, and it's a pretty cool event. There's a video. If you guys are on Facebook, you can go look at there. It's kind of long, so I mean, you're just busy somewhere. You don't have to watch it. But it's pretty cool. This was up in Port Orford. It kind of shoots what it looks like with the iron challenge. Let's see if I can go to the next one. Yeah, this kind of shows, y'all, real
just
quick.
Just give it a few seconds.
What's that?
Just give it a few seconds.
Yeah.
It is cool.
This is the kids doing the iron challenge. Actually, that's our age. We didn't hire, but we recruit aides, and these are the 16 to 17-year-olds. So the goal with our aides is in the next couple of years, we look to send our aides to go try out to go to the California State Park Lifeguard Academy. So that tryout's down in Mendocino Coast. So probably not this year, but next year I'm going to bring a couple of kids down, have them try out so that they can become certified open water guards, and then they can continue to help run our programming, which we're trying to build into Coos County as well. The goals of the program, like I said, this is a tryout to become, go to the academy down in Cal State. But right now I'm working with Coos County. I'm trying to establish another aquatic safety officer position in Port Orford that will run North County into Coos County and then IGA with them so that we can open up more availability on South County. But again, as you know, we're all such small entities in this county, and it's really important that we all just keep working together, right? At the end of the day, we're all wearing the same. We may be in different uniforms, but we're all working together, and that's what we're really trying to do with all of our collaborative partners. These kids qualify, they'll go to a pretty intensive 8-day training down at Huntington Beach where they'll cover a bunch of different skills based off of the junior guard program, but first aid. So at the end of the day, basically out there, yes, we're trying to save lives, big on preventative actions. This guy, that white jacket, saved his life, so I made him take a photo of it because he was holding on to it when I got to him. But and don't try to cross the road or the bar. Just don't do it if you don't know what you're doing. That's another big take-home story. But again, we're just out there providing our outreach education response when needed so that our visitors have a good day. She really wanted a selfie, so I think I forgot where she was from, but she was really nice. So, any questions? Yeah.
So I'm glad to see you.
Yeah.
I don't know how to put this nicely, and I know you're not in the enforcement business, but somebody in this county ought to be
Yeah.
For the work delivery of building safety, I have representation in my life, and I worked in that as a professional in another state.
Yeah.
This is the most dangerous bar on the coast, and I'll tell you why. Because people will take anything and everything over this bar with no regard whatsoever for ocean conditions. They're thinking, well, it's a safe bar, I can do everything.
Right.
My view, we haven't had a lot of fatals here. We haven't had, frankly, a lot of accidents. But if you talk to State Marine Board, you might just park in their ear, because I do frequently, that the enforcement side has got to step this up.
Yeah, I can't speak for enforcement. A lot of times, in my mind, when I'm running around trying to cover a void that I feel like, okay, this is where there's going to be hot spot, it usually comforts me to know that the Coast Guard's here. Like, right, that you have those Coast Guard response. And so that feels really good. We spend a lot of time at your boat ramp, or try to at your boat ramp at Sport Haven. Those are the two main spots. So it's a boat ramp I'm trying to get a hold of people to say, you know, but I will definitely pass that up. And I do agree with you. You're right. We have people from all different crafts, right, that are going out into an environment they're not really aware of. And that's the big outreach. The science work, you know, the road bar, you say there's big signs there. It says, you know, you're going to die, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's one of those things people just don't pay attention to it. I do try to educate, you know, users. Your guides are a big force. Usually they're their own enforcement. So if there's illegal guiding going on, you know, everybody hears about it really quickly because the guides are going to be telling on them. But I try to work with the guides to say, hey, look, can you at least, if you see a bad situation, say something or try to get on that. Coast Guard, you know, they do a lot of patrols. We do, so our operating equipment, we operate on two jet skis, two PWCs. So we just got some new ones that we're borrowing, so we're trying to get out here as more on those to provide the outreach for that. So we'll try to get down here more.
One issue we've had here, and I don't know if the sheriff is still attending to it or not, but we used to have a warning system for the Chetco River.
Right.
In the winter time, that says, and this, I remember this clearly because of the Tampa Bar incident where we killed a couple people. We being South Coast fishermen, had asked at one time for this river to be identified with mile markers.
Yeah.
High enough above the high water so they weren't going to get washed away all the time, but where people could see them. And the idea would be that you would post something online that says, okay, if you're going to float the Chetco River from South Fork down, be aware of that at mile marker or whatever it is, 26. There's a sweeper right there so that people will be notified. Because I know every time we float that in the wintertime, it's a whole new river every year.
Yeah, State Marine Board has gone digital. I'm going to pop it up. You know, my reporting tools, there's actually now what's called a boater obstruction form, and it's something that you can download off, and I'll send it to you, and you can download it off of their website. So if you come across an obstruction, you can report it to them, and they'll post it on the website. I'm not sure how many people are actually looking at the site. You know, honestly, Josh Riddle from the market, I just get a call from usually, like, there's bad something, and we'll go try to deal with it. But, yeah, there is issues. The sheriff's office is contracted to take away those obstructions, but we will help assist with that, too. But there are tools out there for you to put data in if something's going on for users. You got to use your smartphone, but it doesn't have to be online to do it. And that's something you can see on the State Marine Board. They got a lot of information on there, and sometimes it's daunting, right? You're looking through everything. But they do, and they have maps of where obstructions are currently or have been posted. So, it is good to know. Their boating safety manager, Brian Paulson, good contact as well for reports. And then Janine, who might have been down here. Was Janine just down here?
I think they were supposed to. They never called. They said they were going
to
be here.
They were trying to get down to South Coast. She's their facilities. She basically runs all their facility stuff. She's a really good contact as well.
Yeah, Oregon State Marine Board asks all the ports weekly now for any obstructions, any closures, any boat ramp closures, anything that you want to notify to the boaters. They ask. It's a sign of set of things. You put in anything that you have, and they post it for other boaters to see. But you have to access the site to see it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a weekly report, basically, and it's like you can go through all the state's waterways, and they'll say this is closed, or if there's an event going on, they'll have that information.
Well, we will make that announcement here in about 2 hours to those South Coast fishermen, because
yeah.
we don't know this.
Oh, right.
And we're not aware that there is this process. So,
yeah.
And those are the folks that are actually
using right, that are out there, yeah, and that's a great one.
Do you have a business card by any chance?
Yeah, I do. Leave that for you guys. But yeah, thank you for your time.
One more question about those life jackets.
Yeah.
The strips. The ones you said they're made from China are not U.S. Coast Guard approved.
Yeah.
Are all of them Coast Guard approved?
No, I don't think they, there's one brand. Yeah, there's some you can buy from Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be real careful of. And so it's kind of hard because the market just got flooded with all these different kind of off brands. I just basically tell people if you can wear an inherently buoyant one, the foam, it's the way to go. It's just approved by the U.S. Coast Guard. I don't trust inflatables. I don't trust them. Perfect. I don't know what to add to him. Do you guys need more cards? Are you good? Sorry. Yeah, I passed for the wrong guy.
In regards to inflatables, for them to be Coast Guard approved,
they have to say.
Well, but yeah, but for the Coast Guard to approve a life jacket, even if the manufacturer changes a color, they have to go through the entire process of getting that approved again, just as if they had created it for the first time. So it's quite a long process to get them approved. So, and that's from years ago, there was a company called Stormy Seas that used to make a vest or coat, and I wore them back in, '89. I still have a few of them. That company's now out of business. But they don't stay Coast Guard approved. And I spoke to them, why aren't you? Because there are things that fishermen would wear. And there's two different styles. There's a hydrostatic release, which inflates after so much depth of water, or a manual. And they told me that at that time that they could not, because just a color change from red to blue or to pink or green or whatever, they would have to go through that whole entire process, and it was cost prohibitive to do it. So be careful when you look at Coast Guard approving. Real close out.
I think the biggest issue with inflatables is the fact that they have to be maintained.
Yeah.
Right. And that's where people run amok. I mean, you can get a wearable vest, and I've got a ton of them. You don't even have to look at them other than make sure they aren't ripped or torn. But inflatables, you have to service those routinely. You got to look at that little peel in there, that little grain marker. Because you're right. If they fail, you're basically just wearing a fancy little nylon Bolero. You got nothing to go with it. So, and they have improved them, because I remember when they first the automatically inflatables came out. I have a friend who lives here who put it in a large box underneath his boat in Cuddy, and he went down there one day to get something, and the box was exploded, and there was stuff all over because that little fill dissolved in there. And
Anyway. Oh, yeah, sir. I was just going to say, I'm with Coast Guard Auxiliary here.
Oh, yeah.
And we also do boat inspections here for safety.
Yeah.
We don't do tickets, but we tell people, pay attention, safety.
Yeah, I've seen you guys all over the place, and that's a great service.
Yeah. And also, there are groups, so those of us who go up to
Thorough Bay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen I forget the gentleman's name, but him and his wife is up there quite a bit, I think, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what's that? Yeah, they're great. Yeah, I see them quite a bit. That's great. Because I mean, I don't know what your guys' I don't know if you count the data, like who's coming, who's visiting, right? I know you guys have a ton of California boaters, right?
Yeah, we don't track
from. It's hard to track that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm tracking them when I'm out there looking at people's registration, boat registration. But, you know, we've been seeing like huge increase from Nevada, Washington, Utah. See a lot of those boaters. And they're just, you know, targeting the fishery. But definitely seen a lot of out-of-state boaters. So just, not aware of what's going on.
Knowing that it's not your enforcement area.
What's that?
No, never mind.
Yeah.
I was going to go with the aquatic invasive species stuff.
Oh, yeah, we don't want to go there. Yeah, we could do a lot of that. We could go that route.
No, big issue.
Yeah. There's a lot. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Luke. Thank you for coming.
Yeah, you guys have a great day.
Have a great day.
Yeah, talk to you soon. Thanks.
Okay, that brings us now to action item A, resolution 2023-11, removal of the crab dock and ramp on the North Jetty.
Okay, so I think we're all pretty aware of issues, ongoing issues that we've had, previous discussions. Dan, you might have been here for those. This has been discussed all the way back, started in January 11th of 2022. We've had meetings where we have voted to have it removed. Then we decided to keep it. We have had meetings where we have installed gates. So where we currently are at is that the dock being located out on a jetty and due to the surrounding areas, the overall liability for the port continues and it's not going to go away. I do understand some people use it. I would feel completely different about it if we didn't have an alternative, but we do have an alternative. And then, you know, aside from the liabilities of having it, it also does pose a navigational hazard. There's ropes, there's crab pots. We've seen it. I'm sure anybody that has navigated it down in there has seen it. So with this action item, I think it's best for the port, given all the unforeseen that could keep coming to us and the open-ended liability, that we remove the dock and the gangway from it and relinquish any port ties going out that jetty.
I think that addresses the biggest concern I have, and that is we're allowing people or kind of asking people to access on a surface that wasn't really intended for access. I mean, that jetty top is certainly open for vehicles, but its intent was so that emergency vehicles could respond and any necessary repair equipment could get out there to repair the jetty, and that's it. So it's not maintained for any other reason. And yet we're, you know, saying, okay, well, if you want to walk out there, go ahead. I think we're hanging out, and I felt that way for a long time. That's aside from the navigational issues, which are significant, could be significant. So those are just my comments.
Will we be removing the pilings as well when the we get
when equipment? We have equipment in here at that, you know, for another job. We won't specifically call in some for that, but
correct,
we'll use it, and the pilings will more than likely be used for more fender pilings along our docks, you know, especially the ones that have wood still or could be damaged, and start replacing some of those docks with some steel ones.
What are you going to do with the ramp and the dock?
The dock will be hauled out and taken out of the water and stored with the rest of the docks, and the ramp will be stored for future use for future projects.
So we haven't voted on this yet?
No.
Where do we stand on the two losses?
No other word of communication has been brought to me.
I have a lot to say, so I'm just going to dig in here, I guess. I've asked, the navigational issue keeps coming up, and I asked a year ago twice, who has designated that as a navigational problem? And no one could answer that for me. I asked if the Coast Guard had done that, and the answer was no, twice. Personally, I go by that dock four times a month in the summer and one to two times a month in the winter, and I personally do not find it as a navigational hazard. My major concern now is the cost to the port for the legal issues. I think the port is doing a valuable service by having that there, because that crab dock by the Coast Guard station gets overwhelmed in the summer months, and that gives an alternative. I do recognize the cost, the danger, the unstable surface. I see all those things, but you know what? It makes my heart warm when I drive by there and there's a father and mother, two or three kids, they're fishing, they're eating lunch, they got their dog with them. That common all summer long, it gets used, it is valuable to this community. And I just want to get that on the record. I do see the cost. You three right here probably spent hours dealing with issues. We've now had to incorporate our attorneys, which are legal fees, time in front of us here in the commissioners meeting. It is becoming a problem. And I just want to get all that on the record because I value it. I see it has value for Harbor, for Brookings, and the tourists we get all summer long use that, and it has value. I don't know that the value anymore is equal to the cost, time, and trouble. That's said my piece.
Thank you, Greg.
Travis?
Yeah.
There's no way allowing people to go out on that surface of that roadway, being that it's really not made for public use, that we can protect those people from not getting injured, and would we be liable for their injuries if they did get injured there?
It would depend on the circumstances.
Things were
it would depend on how it was brought, which more to my point of the unknown, the liabilities that we're open to, that things can come to us that we haven't dealt with,
mm-hmm.
new things can surface, or the same things that have currently been brought to our table, there's nothing to stop those from continuing and continuing and continuing.
Mm-hmm.
Not having a port structure out there that's not attached to port property, but almost all of our everything at the port, and I really can't think of one that we have port property off-site, off, not attached to our own port property.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing to say you still can't go down there. You can fish off the rocks. You can, nobody's stopping the general public from going through there, unless the Corps, and depending on their sign, which the Corps is giving us a we'll be working with this sort of sign pending whatever decision we have to improve what's going on out there.
But if we do have the dock there and the ramp, we're also encouraging them to come down and use that.
Yeah, and...
And there has been a couple of people that have stated that some of the crab pots did get in there outright, going through there on busy times. They got too close.
Other comments? More comments?
Mm-hmm. 2021, I think, when this was first brought up, and there was a meeting on it, there was opposition in here, and that opposition to keep the craft dock were from veterans and handicapped people. And that opposition needs to remind you that not only Larry fell in love with this place, but that particular dock, but other people do use it, and we need to respect our veterans and our elders about the conveniency or the having it there, keeping it there. So,
well, I just want to, to that, nobody's at any trying to disrespect anybody for any decision.
Okay.
This mainly comes down to the port's exposure, and it's unsafe. Before we put up the gate, people drove down it. People drove down it all the time. Because it has happened previously does not mean that it needs to continue happening.
Well, let me make something clear. I'm not disrespecting the port's opinion on this or what you want to do. All I'm saying is that you had opposition. People showed up at the meeting, and they express themselves. That must mean something in the end, right?
No, it doesn't. We're certainly here to listen to the public. There's no question. At the end of the day, we have to make a judgment call about a balance here. Exposure, and I need to say this, because, you hear it all the time, we can get sued. Well, you can get sued for anything. The question is if we put a facility like that, and that is actually a facility that we put on, what's our obligation to maintain reasonable access to that? And I don't know what a definition of reasonable access is, that would be defined by the court on a case-by-case basis. So, I see that whole thing. At the end of the day, I err on the side of let's do what's best for the court, let's make sure our exposure is reduced, and do what we can to provide opportunities. We have the other crowd talk, which we maintain. It's a tough call. We don't, if we had a dock system like Bandon, where we had a on-the-water dock we could crab off of, we'd be golden. But we don't. We have what we have here. And the feasibility of doing anything like Bandon does is not in the cards at this point. So I think that's how I'm kind of looking at this. So what are we going to do to serve best the people we represent? From the perspective of how much money are we willing to spend or be willing to put at risk for that facility. And I don't know how you weigh the cost-benefit ratio of families going down there versus families. I don't know that there's a good way to do it. So it's not a...
would it be as simple as putting a sign saying enter at your own risk? Legally, anything like that. As simple as that. To protect the harbor.
It's already up there.
It is.
Well, it was up there. We walked, but I haven't put it back up there, but yes.
It's been there.
Entering any jetties that are by the Corps of Engineers are entering at your own risk.
Okay.
But when you have a public area, a public use area, even where it says enter at your own risk, and we're a public entity that has it down there, there is things that have to be done that enter at your own risk is not fully covered by providing something for the public to go to.
Yeah.
There is minimal things that have to be done to comply with accessibility for general safety, drive, any parking, all of that.
Trying to take the stress off the harbor here, that's all. Everything you guys do, we all do, is similar to risk in life. And is there anything recorded in past history of any serious injuries or deaths on that particular dock?
Serious injuries or deaths? No. Okay. But I would,
there's not.
Okay. Well, if I saw a sign up that said, use it, beware of the risk, that would tell me that the person who owns this place already is acknowledging there's a risk involved. So, I don't know how the attorneys would interpret that, but we can beat that up all day. Al, did you have something on the channel?
Not only that, but
just to go ahead and bring up another point about that top over there. Can I tie up a boat to that thing?
What?
Is there a sign that says I can't?
There's not any cleats there.
Don't make a difference.
I'm just
bringing this up to see how much restriction you got on this thing.
Well, it's not designed or set up for boats to tie to it.
I was going to say, given the current briefing that we've been getting from Special District Association of Oregon and the case that just came out of the Oregon State Supreme or Appellate Court in regards to the city of Newport and recreational trails, that's a huge liability for the port out there. It's a huge liability. And as much as it may be enjoyed by the public, for those that do use it, we almost have to remove it just to keep ourselves from being liable for the big liability that will open us up to.
Well, there's an alternative. We can say, all right, let's go spend however many thousand dollars it would take to go out and grade and put in a walkway of some kind. Even an asphalt path going out there, but then you look at what that costs and you have to weigh what that means to the port not being able to do other things versus not having the documents. And I've thought about all these things and thought, well, what could we do? And I cannot come up with a simple answer that says we should go spend $40,000, $50,000 to put in a 10-foot wide asphalt walkway. That just makes sense. It doesn't make sense to me. Not when I look around at all the other things that we've got to do. I'm watching the the boardwalk continually separated, and I mean, we've just got a ton of issues on our plate that I can't justify that kind of money.
And it would have to be really wide to handle wheelchairs and everybody.
Yeah. All right. I think it's time to call a question here.
I'll make a motion. Motion to approve resolution number 2023-11 to remove the craft dock and ramp from the North Jetty and authorize the port manager to sign the necessary forms and applications.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second, Danielle.
Larry.
Yes.
Dan.
Yes.
Sharon.
Yes.
Richard.
Yes. Action item B, delinquent write-off request.
Could I say something about crab docks?
Quickly.
Yeah. I a couple of times had a concern when I'm coming in very slowly, I'm very cautious with my boat, but when I'm past that 5 mile an hour spot, sometimes people, you know, how they take a coal and very mightily cast a grab trap out there, and I've had them drop that thing right in front of my boat, and then that's nothing I can't stop immediately. I stop as quick as I can, but I've had that line catching my prop, and people get upset with me, and not much I can do about that. I can.
Well,
just mentioning that.
Okay, delinquent.
Okay, so I have prepared a summary account and attached some timeline and information on customer Christopher Walco, who has presumably at some point purchased fishing vessel American Made and then failed to meet any of our moorage requirements for a license agreement and had also failed to pay any transient fees. Boat was deemed a hazard and abandoned because he hadn't provided any insurance or registration or any other paperwork for it. We followed the abandoned and derelict vessel program with the Marine Board to have that boat removed from the water, and it has been demolished. At this point in time, I have attempted to reach Mr. Walco by mail and phone and several other attempts, and without any response from him, the bill is now at $6,015.99 on his account, which includes the transient fees, removal of the vessel, disposal of the vessel, etc., and we are requesting to write that off as uncollectible on our accounts receivable. We can submit it to a collection agency.
We want to submit it to the collection agency. The issue with this boat comes because it was sold. It was a boat down here. I had sold it. Nothing was told to the port until it was a mortgage renewal. And he's like, well, I sold the boat. Well, who did you sell the boat to? Well, I sold it to Christopher Walco. He's like, for how much? $5,000. We even had the police out here to, you know, questioning that, you know, is this actually legal? We talked to our attorneys that because that there was money exchanged and both sides acknowledged to it, enforcement had said it's a legal sale. Mm-hmm. So when that happened, Christopher never came to the office, never paid, never thought about it, nothing. We immediately started telling him, you know, you're in violation of the port, trying to get him to move on, moving him to transient days. He never had insurance. So as this happens, it's a problem that every port faces with people selling boats for $1, $5,000, and not actually completing or doing the documentation or selling it to an irresponsible boat owner, somebody that's not going to go through the paperwork. And when that happens, it's very difficult for a collection agency to go after them because they're asking, well, how did the debt come? Well, we have any agreements, you know, what tied him to paying for it? It's because nothing ever even got off the ground. if nothing happens. So I still would recommend turning this in, letting it go its course and see what happens, seeing what kind of questions they ask. But with this one, there is a possibility that it comes back as uncollectible. So I'm just putting that out there now.
Doesn't cost us anything to do that?
No.
Do you know where this guy is?
No.
I did speak with his father. His dad called and asked, you know, if we had seen him. He said he hadn't talked to him. He wasn't sure where he was at, but he was asking about questions about the boat. You know, I told him there's an outstanding bill, and I told him what it was and kind of said, okay. So he wasn't sure where he was at either. Yes.
So basically, if we go to a collection agency, they will do a kind of a cursory look to see if they can find him. And they'll come back and tell us we can't even find this guy, and at that time, that's the end of it.
I wouldn't so much say they can't find it, but for them to pursue it, you know, if they go after it and they can't find it and it goes to like a litigation type thing and they ask us for backup of what we are asking for, we have zero documentation on this boat other than, you know, the previous owner.
New owner never transferred anything over, right?
He didn't do anything, you know?
Right.
He didn't transfer anything. He wouldn't even let the seller sign the title over. So I don't have...
Yeah, this Christopher Walker.
I don't have any proof.
I know the owner tried to go down there. They yelled, screamed, get off my boat. Police were called. And the entire time, the individual, Christopher, that bought this boat, it was a dead end from day one. And I don't think he ever had any intentions. I was down here. He was out floating around in the water with a leaf blower. Out the back, he was casting, he completely destroyed the boat while it was sitting at the dock, and rendered it worthless. It was very close to a homeless type situation, other than the fact that I don't know where he came up with $5,000 to pay for it.
Well, I don't want to argue with enforcement, but I would contend the sale did not occur until the title was signed over.
Right.
That would be my conclusion. But I'm just wondering why we even gonna bother to go to collections with it.
This is our process with overdue and delinquent accounts.
It doesn't cost us anything.
Maybe they'll deep dive into it a little more.
Okay. Well,
with the original owner.
As long as it doesn't cost us anything, I guess it's fine.
It doesn't cost us anything. If what happens with the collection agency is they incur their fees into what they attempt to collect.
Motion to approve delinquent account write-off amount of $6,015.99 from accounts receivable. Submit the amount to Port Collection Agency and proceed with litigation if necessary.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Action item C, EPA wastewater treatment plant phase two funding.
Okay. So, kind of our overview, DEQ asked for some additional information from Jack Aiken, ENC, to complete the NPDES permit process. It's still under review, but they needed some more documents. Phase two funding request was completed and submitted to EPA Region 10 for pre-approval review. Total funding amount came to $3,500,000 with an $875,000 matching. Phase two funding amounts, which what I'm calling the construction, is $3,089,200 with matching at $772,300. EPA R10 quarterly report was completed and submitted. meeting with Pacific Seafood to discuss wastewater treatment operations ended in a discussion of financial needs from Pacific Seafood so they can decide on how to budget. They were told the port is looking for $772,300 in matching funds for construction. The port will provide phase one matching that will be used with our property sale funds. Requests for proposal documents for the plant and civil work are under development, and we expect to have draft documents completed sometime in December or early January of 2024. We hope then to be close in January or February if cards land right, you know, if they come up with that, that we would be ready to put out an RFP sometime by the end of January, maybe February, and that's a very rough date for that to happen. So attached is our work, the budget, the narrative, plans, location, budget summaries. Has everybody had a chance to kind of look through this and familiarize yourself with where the plant's going to go? There is no in-water work. The Pacific Seafood, their old dock, we will not be doing any in-water work. There won't be any pilings associated with it, but it will fix where it comes to the land connection of it. It does include that fix in this as well, so that dock can bare minimum be opened for use when this is done. There is a lot to this. If anybody is at all interested, this is the engineering, calculating, and data supporting things. This is math equations. Quite frankly, it's even above my head what all this is. But this is what went into the plant, the design, and the figures, and the calculations he does to decide what we needed. If anybody wants to see that, I'd be happy to come into my office and take a look. Questions?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, in looking through here, I've got several issues. Let's start with the pilings that are currently in the water underneath the old Pack Choice dock that has been decommissioned due to structural integrity of the dock. Have we tested those pilings to make sure that they're stout enough to support a new dock on top of them?
We're not putting a new dock on top of it.
Looking at the engineering plans that was in our package, you are putting on top of them.
No. Where in here?
Jack had drawings that showed that they would be tied into the caps of those existing pilings.
Page 61?
71?
Mm-hmm. I have 61. Talks about those. Staff replacement, repair, grade.
I mean, at the beginning of it, we wanted the entire dock rebuilt. Funding in water work permits are going to hinder the project to the point where it can't be a part of the entire fix. The main reason for the dock being shut down ever to begin with is due to the failing substructure behind the docks. The pilings, you know, before that dock is open, there probably should be an engineered recommendation on loading, weight limits. You know, it should be re-looked at again. But there won't be any other dock going over the top of it. It'll be the land on land connection. Any of the H piles that we're planning on driving would be above the high water line.
Because he does talk about there would be no in-water work period or need that, but he does label that there would be caps of the existing pilings and that, and there would be H being placed upon them and such. Page 75, Travis. That's numbered as page 75.
looking at that.
My page is running over. Top left, top right corner shows that they are, he's attaching that new dock to the existing pilings that are in the water.
The way I look at this, if you look at reference 9 and reference 13, that's actually the concrete. So it looks to me like what he's talking about is reinforcing the concrete from the top to the bottom of the base beam. And the actual dock is to the left of that.
Okay, he's reinforcing, but are we, so are we reusing the existing dock that's there?
Or we have to, yeah. We can't, this project will, can't fund a brand new dock, a new top, and everything is what it needs to happen is where the ground has washed away and the dock has actually fell in. That's what needs to be fixed.
Okay, so we're talking back at the ground itself.
Back at the ground itself from, you know, as it's showed on here. It starts about right where their trommel is, you know, the thing that's separating the solids right now. Just beyond their building and not out onto their dock, there's a line you can see where the dock has caved in. It will be removing that area, that whole section that's above the high water line, and placing in H piles and spanning that section with beams with concrete
portals. Okay, so we're going to currently use the existing dock, the ocean side or the river side of that dock.
We're utilizing that, and you know, as funds change, we'll be able to hopefully be able to move out towards the water, but it'll be farther.
Okay, so in here he also labels what currently we can call a public receiving hoist area as a debris area on here. And I forget which page of the drawing it is. I thought it was 76, but it's obviously not 74. Maybe it was 74. Anyway, he labels a corner of that dock. Yeah, it's page 74, the previous one. The corner of that dock with a barge parked in the water beside it, and it's a debris area. So we're going to lose the public hoist. Is that correct?
I wouldn't say we're losing that debris removal material staging.
Because he talked about removing the hoist.
Well, he's not removing that hoist. And the material staging, the debris removal, will be the dig out from what they're doing, which will be a part of the construction phase. So once we get going on this project and we're putting in a wastewater treatment plant, I guess there could be times where the public hoist could be impacted due to construction.
Okay, well, that's where I'm at, is we're going to lose the possible revenue of that, and during that time frame of that hoist may not be available, should we have some buyer that come in from out of the area that wants to buy product across there. I mean, obviously, if it's a large product.
Given our history with the use of the public hoist, I'm not concerned about missing a window currently. We'd have to get a lot more use out of that public hoist for us to plan that. And, you know, pending on when the RFP goes out and the construction actually starts, my guess is it's not going to happen, start in the middle of the winter breaking ground. I imagine it would happen in the springtime. And, you know, hopefully it's not in the middle of a crab season. That's typically the only time
that would be used.
And that would be something as a port and us looking through it and planning out when everything's going to show up and come. It would be taken under consideration that we're not impeding that.
Well, we're talking next spring, and hopefully this crab season fires off on time this year, hopefully. The other concern that I have, and being that I sit on the Harbor Water Board, they have expressed to me that there is a water main, actually a tease, or makes an elbow, someplace around the coal storage. There's a line that runs down behind the boardwalk here, and then it turns, and there's another line that comes down from Lower Harbor Road back. Is there going to be a gap between the current coal storage and the back of the ice or the wastewater treatment plant. Is there like a driveway between there or something that will be
there? There'll be access to get in between there, especially for forklifts and the ice house being there. There's
okay.
going to be access through there. The main problem that we've had as far as with that water line is Harbor Water can't identify where it's at.
Believe me, I looked at the maps today. There are maps from 66, 72. Yeah, I'm well aware that there are a lot of issues with it. My concern is it not knowing where that line is exactly, because the maps from 66, they don't show the access road to Pack Choice where it was at on that map in 1966. The 71 or 72 map isn't any better, but I don't know how much excavation we're going to have for the footings and such for the tanks that go back there, but that water line, which supplies, thankfully has a shutoff valve between, well, out here in the parking lot before you get to the end of Memorial, we can isolate Pacific Seafood in that area, so it won't impact here, but how deep do we know we're going to have to excavate so that if we do find that water main, that we can get it fixed or and not impact everybody in the business? Do we know? I didn't see that in the comments.
I know we just had a driller come out and do test holes to see how deep for the H piles that we're planning on doing out there and for the loading of the concrete. Right now, everything is based upon kind of loose, bad soil. So once we get that, I would imagine that we're not going to be digging terribly deep to get to the footing and the strength that we need to support.
Because it doesn't even say in the maps how deep that pipe
was
buried.
I don't think that.
So.
Oh, and yeah, as what I've heard in the past and stuff, it froze at one time because of the cold storage. That's why the cold storage is limited to negative 10, because that's designed to be at negative. Go down to negative 50, negative 60.
Yeah.
But if it's turned on, all the way up, it'll freeze that line.
Correct.
You know, I would love to know exactly where that is so we can create as much room for it as possible. There will be a buffer behind the cold storage building because they have the unit right out of the back of it that does the in-floor heating. That's in there. There is an in-floor heating system. So there is, and mechanical stuff. So there will be a setback off the back of that building to at least be able to get something back there to repair it. I don't really know where the lines are. We called for locates, you know, and there's not a lot of information.
There, because when they buried that line, there was no wire put in the ground for the location services back when they did it. So and believe me, our maps up there are, some of them are ragtag from overuse, and some of them are just falling apart due to age. We're trying to figure out what we can do to correct it, and this is one of the lines that we have to try to figure out.
I know at one time it was discussed about, you know, abandoning that line or section of there, looping something, creating a loop. I know Herman had talked to me about it at one time. I don't really know what else to say about it there. I know we're getting locates. We are respecting existing easements and where there's things that are going on, electrical and other infrastructure under there, because I don't want to build something over it and then be like, oops.
Well, and
I don't want, you know, so we are taking a little bit of extra time to make sure we're identifying those.
Yeah, I just, if we can find that line, God, it would help a whole lot of everybody. And it stubs from where that elbow is according to the map. And I don't understand why, and neither does anybody in the office up there. It shows a stub out of a 6-inch line. It's an 8-inch line that goes down here across and then ties back in. But for some reason, there's a 6-inch line that stubs out towards the water itself. And where it goes to, no one knows, according to the map.
The 6-inch water line that comes off it from by the, what's the blue building just got hit by the car?
The
bush building, that stuff that's sitting there?
No, I'm talking, this is down here at the corner, behind the cold storage area. There's a 6-inch stub out that goes out for what purpose, we don't know yet. So we're looking.
We're good. Okay. Well, yeah, so if we, it'll be a lot easier, but there will be a buffer room. I'm pretty sure in here.
I had a hard time trying to, that miniature steel, trying to find it, but I didn't know if there was one for sure.
There it is. Yeah, if you, from back here, the plant, I mean, I'm not scaling it, but it looks like the, oh, right there. That first tank will be 10 and a half feet off the back of the cold storage.
Okay,
so there'll be a tank. So
hopefully there's room there that our line is underneath. That if something happens, we can still get in and abandon or whatever we need to.
Yeah. Okay. And as far as that goes, whenever we want to help, you guys need help trying to identify that, I'm more than willing to put in a little bit to help find it, because I think it's in the best interest of everybody to kind of know where that's at.
Agreed. Okay. I'm good for now.
Mm-hmm. We still have not specifically identified the plant we're buying. True.
We know the parts, the pieces, the engineering, and what Jack has laid out, that the equipment that we need. When we go out for an RFP, we will be taking that equipment and his design specifications and putting it out there for bid for any other plant manufacturers that can put together equipment like this as it's engineered. Or if they have other ideas, I am, with, as this goes through, I know my guess is that once we find an RFP, it'll probably be a 90-day RFP, at least for 3 months, to make sure manufacturers, you know, all these places have at least enough time to price it adequately, you know, fit these parts and pieces maybe in their design and, you know, what they have and try and put it together, which is going to have questions for Jack that Jack will have to answer. So it's going to take, when the RFP goes out, it could be a 60-day, maybe even a 90-day period, so we can get everybody to give us the most, get the most quotes we can for it.
If you don't, I'm just asking for a very, 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 very rough estimate. We got our $3 million, and we're doing matching, and pack choice is going to kick in. Ultimately, what's it going to cost the port out of pocket? Do we know? Rough ballpark.
I expect that we won't spend all of the $175,000 that we have set aside from our property sale. Currently, right now, we've been, you know, before the phase, because we don't have our phase two funding yet. That's what this is, and that's what it's applied. Our phase one, we have $513,500 for phase one. We have spent $300,000, maybe not even that much to date, where we have kind of, I don't think we've even spent that much. So the matching funds on that, we've actually been absorbing right now, because there's no matching funds to have. But once we go with that, I figured the best way for the port to recoup our you know, the matching part of it is that we pay ourselves back out of our land sale money. And, you know, that money will cover the whole entire $513,000, the phase one funding. We don't expect to spend all of it, all the phase one funding, all that money. And whatever money is left over will actually get rolled over into the project. We're kind of keeping that for incidentals. You know, it'll be a couple. It's not going to be a lot. And if we don't have to use it, that's why I'm asking Pacific Seafood for the whole phase two, that we can at least pay ourselves back, and whatever's remaining we can carry through for the project. And what we don't spend, we will be paying back to Hefe.
Well, Travis, when you met with Pacific Seafood, you must have come out of the meeting feeling okay about giving them that $778,300 for their share, or to help contribute to that. And they, of course, they're still looking into it. So if they don't come back with it, then where do we sit?
We're going to come back and talk about it. Obviously, but from my perspective, and sitting here, we're not going to move forward with putting out an RFP without do anything. I'm not even convinced that I want to put out an RFP. We're pretty much at the point where we're waiting on Pacific Seafood.
Okay.
I don't want to put out an RFP and start having questions come in and starting to develop something if we haven't even secured the funding yet. I'm not going to waste their time. Pacific Seafood is going to have to come to us and be like, this is what we have allocated, this is what we can do.
Okay.
And then we will see what we can work within those numbers.
Okay. Well, I'd like to see this move forward, and so be waiting to hear this contact.
Build on that, because I've had a lot of people say, well, why would they put us that much money? So the $772,000 is a lot less than 3.5 million.
Yeah.
They need
4.375 million.
So if you're sitting at, and I won't speak for them, but let's just assume we had a corporation that had an asset, that would be very valuable to us. And we had a choice of spending $4.3 million to build it or $772,000 to build it, I think the choice for me would be easy. So I think that's probably in their mix of valuation on how this goes.
I asked, they are currently right now with speaking with DEQ, you know, they have many other problems that they have where a publicly owned treatment works isn't available. So they're going through a lot of that, and I asked the question, I said, if DEQ relaxes everything and makes all your plants, you know, operate and they actually bend and change for you, would you still need a plant? Like, are we waiting for this? And they said absolutely, they would still need a plant to meet the water quality standards that they have here. So through this, I mean, they have never said no, they haven't balked at it. They've just been very cautious about what comes out before they get the proper approvals. I think they are
okay.
Completely and still needed.
Well, I think our engineer has done a wonderful job on this, and he's really gone beyond and by listening to the board, getting what we really wanted out of it and put it together, and I believe that Pacific Seafood will probably step forward. It's just I'm glad it's going to come back to us with something written.
Yeah. It's a, you know, this is a difficult plant to build. There's not a bunch of these plants laying around that you can call and get a whole bunch of advice. I mean, these are new criteria, a lot of dissolved metals, which are very, very hard to remove from it. You know, coupled just with tough guidelines from DEQ giving it to them. The only way we've really been able to maximize this potential is because of having a mixing zone, an estuary where the mixing zone is a 300 by 300 foot mixing zone instead of the 100 by 100 that we originally were at. But being able to factor dilution rates, which is the mixing zone, puts us in a spot where not a lot of other people have the mixing zone and the dilution rates with us. Pacific Seafood can't get the same permit that we get. So.
Okay, anything further? Mike, you have a question?
First of all, has this port learned anything about Charleston, who also got a grant, you know, a wastewater treatment plant, and Pacific Seafood is involved? What is Pacific Seafood, are they acting in good faith in Charleston, or did they just abandon their ideas? Did Laura Spill talk to you about, hey, you know, this 900J processing fee, that the permit that we're looking for, is going to be costly, and it's going to be a long-term investigation in order to get that permit itself? In Charleston, did they have to deal with that, or in the same subject, did the Port of Commissioners make a deal with Harbor Sanitation to access the waste to sanitation and up the hill of goals?
Yeah,
is that how
we went down that road with the City of Brookings with a $3.5 million check in our pocket saying, what do you need? And we got it.
You got knocked out. So you need that 900J processing.
Does
anybody know what it costs and who's
going
to pay for it?
We made the decision to go ahead with it.
Okay.
As far as Charleston goes, I'm not aware that Charleston got any funding to build a wastewater treatment plant. I talked to a couple of people that were involved from the seafood processors. They wanted one.
Mm-hmm.
But to the best of my knowledge, we're the only game that has money in hand in terms of a federal appropriation. So we're kind of it. And what Charleston does is what Charleston does.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if we can learn something from Charleston. Who's playing this? You know, I mean,
well,
I think Charleston, to be, that they're waiting to see how ours work out.
Charleston is behind
the game. They're looking at the almost the exact same type of scenario, trying to provide to keep their tenants, to keep them going. And the reason being is that they're going to, the same reason why the port is having to do the permits, because DEQ is not allowing these processors to access the same permit and the same permit criteria as a public zone treatment works.
Right, they're all different. I understand that.
They're not all different. There's just better, we have a better permit process, and with dilution rates being number one.
Well, we're a lot farther down the road with engineers than anybody,
yeah,
which includes the mixing zone, which includes all that dilution rates, and I mean, it's just how it is.
Okay, well, we just then.
But as far as whether that choice of dealing in good faith with people, I mean, I'm not going to make that call. That's up to the individual. I can tell you that PAC choice is big. PAC choice is in a lot of places. I don't see PAC choice going away. And I don't see them as, from my perspective, being a bad partner in this. I mean, Dan can tell you, you can go on the dock and you can hear anything you want to hear about PAC choice and any of the other fish fires, and it probably depends on your perspective. But from what I've seen up and down the coast, PAC choice is here and looks like they're here to stay in a lot of places. So.
Well, I should hope so, but still, I mean, we're talking finance.
Well, this is the United States of America. That could be a Chinese company tomorrow. Anyway, let's move on.
One last comment.
Go ahead.
I want it on the record that I oppose where we're placing it. I understand it's going to get our dock rebuilt, but I oppose where it's going. I think it's a waste of our capacity to unload boats in the future. I understand why it's being built there, but I don't agree with where it's being built. I think it should be built back behind Pacific Seafood on ground and tied into it otherwise. That being said, I'm done.
Okay. With that, I'll call a question. Make sure to make a motion.
Okay, I'll make
a
motion.
And remember, this is one of a series of monumental motions that we make here occasionally, so go right ahead.
Well, I'm glad to see it moving. Okay, the motion to approve port manager to sign and submit phase two construction funding for wastewater treatment plant.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second, Danielle.
Larry.
Yes.
Dan.
Yes.
Karen.
Yes.
Richard.
Yeah. Okay. This brings us to information item A, the FEMA update.
Okay. FEMA update, as I said in my management report, the clamshell dredging was rescheduled due to another project lasting longer for Billiter Marine. Billiter is now scheduled to dredge in the beginning of December. Drag flow dredge is under fabrication and is scheduled to arrive in January 24. 3,500 feet of 8-inch pipe was welded. Welding sections are placed along the boat basins. You'll see extra sections over in the kite field. Those will be sitting there for a year until we get done. The next dredging season, we'll be adding on to it to finish down the kite field side, and then as we break down and move around, that pipe will get moved over to the to this basin here. Construction of the sediment basin walls were completed this month. A total of 223 concrete blocks were installed to form the perimeter of the basin. We used more blocks because we decided to use two blocks high throughout the entire wall section. The port is anticipating the dredging from January 16th to March 15th. 2024. The port has five payment requests in with FEMA totaling $709,000. $709,002. The oldest request is at 74 days as of November 3rd for $562,107. This request included the dredge and generator. The other four requests are 21 days and less as of November 3rd. So the obviously the big one we're waiting for is the $560,000. Our dredge is, we did add some pictures in with this. I think it does show us building the sediment basin walls, the flanges, and the pipe that was delivered, the pipe building process, some of the areas where it's located, as well as pictures that were sent from Dragflow. This is a picture of our dredge that is being built. And they are anxiously awaiting our second payment for shipping it. So our generator is also done, and we're waiting on the payment for them to ship.
So if you do start this process in January, is someone coming over from Italy, or is there someone here in the States?
There's somebody here in the States that comes to do it. They have a, I think they have another division in California somewhere.
They'll come up for training.
Yeah, they'll be here for 3 weeks? I think it's here for 3 weeks. It's either 2 or 3 weeks of training that we get. 15 days straight. So we'll be doing as much as we possibly can, making that thing work as hard as it can while it's here.
Yes.
One of the experiences that I had is the state dredge. We started dredging and a piece of wood got stuck in the impeller. We disassembled the entire pump case, and it would have been near impossible if our trainer wasn't there to help us do it. Just doing it for our first time. So we're going to work that machine really hard while it's here just to make sure any bugs, any kinks, any questions that might come up, we can hopefully get them answered and going while it's here.
Sounds great.
On the pictures, Travis, on page 157, you got the sediment basin outfall you're looking out. I take it we've submitted the outfall for the coming out of our storage basin, whatever we're going to call it, the catch basin. And what about the slope going down back into that barge basin?
We
just going to string it going back down to the water when it comes off that cement slab and it goes back down the slope. That gives it going to be a screen down there on the.
We will have, but through our permit, through our in water work permit, we have to have a turbidity screen.
But I'm talking about for erosion control on the bank.
That's why we concreted and we pushed it out as far as we did. We had McLennan come in and put riprap all through there for to reduce turbidity. It gives the water more time to slow down and to help prevent erosion.
Absolutely.
Mainly it's there for turbidity and the function of the discharge.
I'll comment, as I open my next chapter of my life, I never hear about FEMA again. But I can tell you, dating the federal government ain't much fun. Okay, information item B, boardwalk conditions.
Okay, boardwalk conditions. So this is something that we've been monitoring since about 2017 when a small gap began to appear. We had EMC engineers was asked to advise the port on any threats to public safety. The port inspected and documented the continued movement. Repairs and replacement plans are in our natural hazard mitigation plan and our strategic business plan. Securing funding will be difficult due to not being considered as critical infrastructure and small amounts of revenue generated from the boardwalk through a fence. The port did install a fence to protect public safety. Port disconnected electrical and joists to reduce chances of further damage. Currently, the failure is progressing south down the boardwalk. Starts at the north end, and it is beginning to peel off past where we had put the handrail. The shoring was installed in 1996 and is failing, which is failing. The shoring, each pile is the concrete that they put in. Best that I can tell is that the plans did call for dead men to be installed on the higher end of it with cable tiebacks. I cannot see any that were put in. There's things that have been previously done that we're still trying to work through, and ultimately limited its life by quite a bit. Staff will attempt to reposition the dock to the original location. If the attempt is unsuccessful, staff will disassemble the failing section completely. So I put this in here as information because it is getting to the point where we have to do something. We will be doing something. My goal currently right now is the steel brackets that are on top of the pilings, which are holding the pilings. I want to cut those out and see if we can take our telehandler and drag that back against the concrete. I think if we cut it loose from the outside pilings, it'll move. We can drag it back. My concern is if the pilings are going to spring beyond what the edge of the dock is. It's a 1 foot gap. It's already loaded. It's going to spring a little bit, and then I'm going to pull the dock back even farther. It'll be an attempt that if it doesn't work, we will be disassembling that end of the dock. Because there's really, we don't have the money or the funds to afford to tear all that out and redo it. And the ongoing issue by spreading, I mean, the problem spreading, and at some point we're going to have to stop the bleeding and cut off the limb that ain't working. But I am definitely proposing this. I am open to suggestions. If anybody has any ideas, thoughts, come talk to me because I'm open to them because I really don't know what to do other than try and pull it back and relieve some of the pressure.
Okay. Any commissioner comments?
I think the work's been very busy, very, very busy, preparing for the wastewater treatment plant, working with FEMA and getting all that together and learning to do the pipes and getting it set. And I think, and the sport looks really good, too.
Thank you.
So on a typically down note, I've been starting to do some work on next year's salmon season. And there's very little information out there, but preliminarily, it looks like most likely we will have another pretty good coho fishery. Most likely we will not have a snook fishery. Just to put that in perspective, there are 5,000 adult fish at the Coleman National Fish Hatchery right now, where there's normally well over 100,000. So the Sacramento run is not there. So.
Is anybody monitoring the salmon? I mean,
it's not down, but they're in the middle of having a progression of meetings about what's going to happen next year. And there's a lot of things that are coming into play here. For example, the Klamath and the surrogate for California coastal Chinook, which are listed. That's why we have an exploitation rate of 16% on 4-year-old Klamath fish. We haven't even made 10%, we reduced it to 10% last year, and we're still over harvesting those fish, which means a lot of further reduction coming up. So that coupled with all the new habitat and the new escapement, I wouldn't have a real rosy outlook for climate fish either.
Okay, so there may not be any fishing in the ocean for California again.
Don't quote me on this yet because it's early times, but I'm just telling you all the signals are looking that way, that we may not have a direction to the fishery to take off in Mexico.
Because I know how it impacts our river here for the river fishing when California is closed. It's very high.
I'm more concerned about the impact of the port. It obviously has a big impact on us in terms of noise and launches and all that kind of stuff.
That as well.
But anyway, that's what I have. Anybody else? Okay, our next regular meeting date will be Wednesday, December 20th, 2023, featuring Santa Claus. The guy from FEMA with a check in his hand.
Have a nice Thanksgiving.
Okay, with that, we will adjourn. Thank you.
Goodbye.
Are you going to report on River North?